Welcome to the Esports Business Network podcast. I am Trent Knox, the founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. I'll be the host on this episode of the EBN podcast, EBNP number 57. Our guest is Russell Folwell. Russell, also known as My Magnum Hertz, is a Facebook gaming partner with over 22,000 followers. We talk about his history playing video games, why he started streaming mobile games, and how he's bringing mobile gaming tournaments to his community. Enjoy.
This is the future. Evolution. This is the future.
Welcome back to another Esports Business Network podcast. I'm joined by someone who's built an amazing community in the mobile gaming environment and mobile esports environment over on a platform that most people don't talk about that much, Facebook Gaming. Welcome to the show, Russell Folwell.
Thank you, Trent. Good to be here.
And it's Folwell?
Yeah, it's perfect.
Folwell. Okay, got it. I got connected with you with another member of the EBN community, Bruno Silva, and the first time I met him, he's an interesting individual. You know, his English is not his first language, but he's able to convey and communicate a lot about the mobile gaming and mobile esports space that he's really, really tuned in when it comes to that. And so he was kind enough to connect you and I, and getting to learn about what you guys are doing over on Facebook is amazing. But before we jump into everything related to that, I'd like to get to know you a little bit better and let the audience get to know you a little bit better. When did you first start gaming?
Absolutely. Well, this is taking it back because I'm quite an old chap now. So I'm in my early 40s. The first recollection I've got of computer games was when I was probably the early 80s, really, was when it started to come through. And actually, a lot of my friends' parents had kind of Amigas, the Commodores, etc. But for myself, we as a family, we really couldn't afford those types of equipment. So the first console my parents ever bought me was the Sega Master System. So although I'd had earlier experiences than that, the Sega Master System was the one for me. It was absolutely beautiful. I've been a huge, huge Sega fan ever since. I've had pretty much every console going. I've actually got every console that's been out. Actually, I'm a big retro collector. But yeah, so the Master System. What a controller as well. What a controller.
Every single Sega system?
I've got
you on them all?
Pretty much every single Sega system apart from the rare test systems.
But right.
I used to do some other stuff before the gaming world and the streaming world came together. I used to do a lot of buying and selling of kind of retro, and yeah, the house is full of it.
Oh wow, I didn't know that. That's really cool to learn that. It's interesting. Last night I was in a Clubhouse conversation, and I brought up the subject of there's like a concept console that was made by PlayStation and Nintendo, but previously to that there was a concept console between Sega and PlayStation, There's just there are these consoles out there that are like, unique and not too many people have them, and they're like something, you know, highly coveted pieces of retro nostalgia.
And if I could, I'd probably sell my arm and my legs genuinely to get hold of some of the bits and pieces that were available, and that, especially the concepts. Everything that I've got is kind of pristine condition, boxed, and it's just I just I've just been a bit of a geek throughout all the years. I mean, it was only when I kind of came back around to the retro gaming after many, many years. So I've gone through all of the console phases that we all go through. It's actually only recently I've actually bought my first gaming PC. So So it was mainly consoles that I've kind of focused on.
That's awesome, because what's interesting about that is, I think that generations before us, you know, it was like really cutting edge gaming consoles, and computers were the size of whole rooms and stuff like that. And so generations like you and I that had access to gaming consoles, home box gaming consoles to be able to play, is probably just super fortunate for the world that we live in now that gaming is so accessible. What were the games that you played, the first games you played?
So I was always Master System, Alex Kidd. I loved Sonic and Mario. I would play those to death. As that evolved, and obviously the audience can't see, but you can see the photo. I'm a huge Crash Bandicoot fan. So it was all of those, you know, all of those style of games that I was just addicted to. I wanted to complete them, and I wanted to do speed trials. I wanted to try and get through them as quickly as possible. So it was just, because back then you didn't really have the kind of the multiplayer as such, did you? It was, you know, you're competing against yourself and trying to beat these games. So it was phenomenal. Those are the games. And then as we evolved kind of through the different consoles, then I got onto the love that we've found now, which is Call of Duty.
Yeah. Do you have siblings?
I do. I have two younger brothers.
Yeah, did you grow absolutely up playing them couch co-op?
We did, but I was always a little bit too competitive. All three of us were actually fairly decent standard gymnasts. So all we did is we trained, then we played other sports, and then as soon as we were home, it was straight onto the consoles. I mean, it must have been a nightmare for my parents, because we weren't at the stage where you could buy, you know, a console each. You were sharing your consoles with your brothers. And I say, because I was the oldest, obviously I always had the most game time, there's a lot of competition in my family when it comes to everything involving kind of sports and gaming. So it was brilliant.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Do you have the same sort of relationship with them now? Do you go out to like arcades and stuff like that and compete against each other in arcades?
We always have done wherever we go. It's always a competition, doesn't matter what it is, but especially things like, I mean, I remember going to the arcades when we used to play Turtles and Simpsons. It was always three boys, and then my dad used to stand on the end, and he used to button tap a few times, but he was never any good. So, but you know, even Sega Rally, Virtua Racer, all those games, just beautiful. Especially when you got two younger brothers.
That's so awesome. I have one younger brother. We're about 7 years apart, and he's more of like the story based game, kind of guy, and never been competitive in video games. He's definitely not, doesn't like to lose, you know, but he's never really gone with the online stuff or like really gotten involved with that. But you mentioned that you got into the resale market for a little bit. Are you still doing that?
I did. No, not now, actually. Now I've started the gaming stream. That kind of died down, and there's a huge market. The retro gaming market. I mean, even the slightly newer stuff that we do, because there's a lot of things that obviously will become in the future.
Yeah,
some really, really highly collectible pieces of memorabilia and beautiful pieces. I mean, I've got the audience can't see, but behind me I've got a beautiful 20th anniversary PlayStation and things like that. It's just the things that I think of my generation would be like beautiful, beautiful collector's items in the future. So it's lovely to have a lot of things like that and be able to do that through you know, a business, and that was obviously generating an income for me to then go out and purchase the slightly rarer things. So
yeah,
I sadly didn't get into things like Pokemon or anything like that. I wasn't kind of into that, but I wish I had been, to be honest. So
yeah,
because the market's huge, and actually you meet an amazing amount of people doing what we do in both, you know, the buying and selling of the retro, and then even the slightly newer stuff, you know, kind of PlayStations, all the way through to even the Switches that we were, you know, the new pieces of equipment that have now come out. So, but yeah, it's brilliant. I'm still friends with a lot of people throughout that whole industry, and it's worldwide. So I've met so many great people in the US, because there's a big collector's market in the US. You'll find in Europe as well, there's quite a big collector's market. So it's brilliant.
It's pretty awesome.
And things.
Yeah, that's what's happening this weekend for me. Classic Game Fest. And I technically right now, I think it might be running for the world's largest classic games festival. Well, I mean, there's not much competition because of the fact that a lot of conventions and festivals aren't going this year, but they've always been in the top five of the largest conventions in the world. And it should be really interesting to see what kind of products they bring out this time. They have a couple of different resellers locally and people from other places around the world that fly in and set up booths and display their stuff. They even have like a retro gaming console museum. And so you can like kind of go and look at what all these cool old school devices and stuff like that.
This is heaven. That's heaven for me. I could spend weeks there just reminiscing and looking back on all the beautiful things that have been launched over the years in gaming.
Yeah, I'm trying to sort of learn more about the retro gaming side, because Mario World and Spyro and other games like Sonic and whatnot are becoming a different sort of esport in their own right, with speedrunning and whatnot. And people are getting so good at the game that they glitch out in and out of the game and make the game, you know, complete the game in record times, like less than, you know, when it came out in the box. You know, it might have taken hours, if not days, to beat the game, and they're beating it in minutes. And sometimes even shorter than that. And so that's really interesting. You brought that up a little bit, and the speed running thing is really an interesting thing. I'm learning much more about it. Them and Iron Man challenges, which are like, you know, trying to accomplish a goal without ever getting hit, you know, throughout the whole game. Those are pretty amazing things as well.
But isn't it interesting how far the gaming has come and what we're now considering kind of esports and what we're watching? And I mean, we were all sitting on our sofas playing those games with our brothers all those years ago. And now there's people that you know that will do this for a living. They will generate an income from doing what they're doing and providing quality entertainment. And it's not just about watching television. It's not just about watching, you know, watching VHS, right, DVDs. Yeah. And now, you know, the world is moving. It's beautiful. It's beautiful, and it's great to watch. And I'll find myself, and that's one of the good things about Facebook gaming. The things you can find on there are just, you know, and it's, you know, so accessible to people that probably wouldn't even be a part of things like Twitch and YouTube, etc., because they're just, you know, they are more dedicated to gamers, where that's, you know, we'll chat about the advantages and disadvantages of Facebook gaming coming up. But it's really interesting, because I'm finding that more and more. And they recommend them on your timelines now as well, because once you searched it once, it
right, yeah, up. Yeah, yeah. So speaking of that, what is the name of your community? What is it, the brand that you're building over on Facebook Gaming?
So the actual page is called My Magnum Hertz Gaming. I should have changed that. I did not realize we would be you know, 18 months on in streaming, I did not realize I'd be doing it, you know, kind of more as a part-time, you know, hobby, and raising a lot of money for an amazing charity called Special Effect. But it's stuck now. It is what it is. It was actually a name that was given to me by a Turkish gentleman when I was playing Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. And I used to be part of quite a specialist clan that played Search and Destroy. And I kept killing the guy with a Magnum, because just run around with a riot shield and a Magnum. I used to get so good at the game, I didn't need anything else. And I kept killing him, and he kept shouting, "My Magnum hurts." So I changed my in-game name all those years ago, and I've kept it ever since. So that's actually my in-game name for pretty much everything. Everything I play is that "My Magnum hurts." So yeah, it's one of those stories that you think I could have come up with something a bit more, you know, a bit more funky and a bit and actually a bit more promotable, but for the future. Yeah. But it's there now. But yeah, it's got quite a nice backstory.
Right. Yeah. And so, you kind of mentioned that, in the past, you know, getting gaming content, even when I could remember growing up, before the advent of YouTube and before the advent of Twitch and before the advent of Facebook gaming, you kind of got it on TV sometimes, or you would go into a game store and there'd be some videos coverage there. But now with real time live gaming interaction, what made you choose Facebook gaming? Were you watching live gaming before you started, or would you just dive into it on your own?
I was actually recommended from a friend who was a streamer, and he was streaming on Twitch, and he had decided to move over to this new platform, Facebook Gaming. Mm-hmm. So obviously Facebook were trying to launch into the market. They've got a really big reach, and I didn't really see myself as a streamer or an entertainer, or this wasn't planned. I suppose it is, you know, with a lot of streamers, actually, they don't go into it thinking, you know, we're going to get to the stage, you know, where we're at. So I just went into it. I wanted to enjoy the games. I wanted to interact with people. A lot of my friends who played the game were also on Facebook. So I could say to them, you know, a lot of people, I mean, how many billions of people in the world have got Facebook? So, yeah. And Facebook gaming is now integrated, and it has been from the early adoption into, you know, your standard Facebook apps. So it just made sense. I mean, I didn't want to just be a gaming platform. I saw what I wanted to try and do was just try and have fun, provide something which was a little bit more entertaining. Especially if you're not particularly good at a game that you play, and you don't have to be, you know, there's lots of things. I mean, if you're exceptional at a game, streaming's good, but if you're an entertainer or you like providing, you know, different content, it is a great platform to start with, and the growth potential on Facebook will be huge, and obviously Facebook is backed by a lot of money, isn't it, at the end of the day?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's it just seemed a, you know, a really nice, easy platform, and I could meet a lot of people that also weren't from gaming.
If you see what I mean. So did you ever really pursue video gaming before that? Were you you mentioned you were a part of a clan? Did you guys compete in tournaments and stuff like that before you joined in on the Facebook gaming?
So back in the day when we used to the kind of the clan competition. There was a lot of computer games, especially the Call of Duty games, that didn't really have, you didn't really have kind of a custom lobby. So it was really difficult to compete in a tournament environment. So you always used to leaderboard compete. So the clan that I was in was constantly online. I mean, there were some players that were on, you know, 20 hours a day, you know, having, you know, 3-4 hours sleep, and then they were back on the game and playing again. So we kind of specialized in the two parts of, if you know Call of Duty well, Search and Destroy and Domination, and that was where we kind of built it. And there was about 20 of us in the clan, and it actually went on for years and years throughout all the, you know, I've actually got a full-time job, so I don't stream for a living.
Yeah.
So, and as you get older, you do different jobs, more responsible jobs have come along, but I've always still played Call of Duty. So it's,
Were you playing on console? And what console?
Always PlayStation I've played on. So always PlayStation. I've had Xbox. I've all the Xboxes, no problems. But I used the Xboxes more for their exclusive content, and I've always played PlayStation mainly because of the controller. Really, it's a simple thing in there. Yeah, I just prefer the PlayStation controller. So
yeah, it's an interesting thing. I think I've gone back and forth about that. I think the newer Xbox controllers aren't as good as the Xbox 360 controller, but I always thought the PS4 controller was better than the new Xbox One controller. So it was like, yeah. I definitely played more Call of Duty on PlayStation than I've ever played on Xbox. That's for sure. No, except I played way more zombies on Xbox.
Absolutely.
than I have on PlayStation.
They're all fun games. And actually, with the new consoles have come out, obviously, and the PlayStation 5's arrived. And I've even now converted my lovely wife to play on the PlayStation 5. So I don't really get to see it now, to be honest, with streaming and work. I go downstairs and then Susan's playing on the PlayStation 5. But it's, I think... We still like the controller, the new controller for the PlayStation 5 over the Xbox. So
yeah, that's
it's an interesting one because the new Xbox is absolutely phenomenal. What an amazing piece of equipment. But I mean, now the gaming PC's arrived for the stream though.
Right.
That's just a different level.
Yeah,
it's just a different level. The things you can do are just incredible.
Yeah, it's just a whole different league of it in comparison. Gaming PCs are interesting, but the console, it still has a warm place in my heart when it was just the media center of the home and way more accessible than the PCs were when I was growing up. And so, you know, they've gone back and forth saying consoles don't need to be connected to the internet, all this other stuff, but, you know, or have Netflix on them or whatever. But it still seems like, you know, the consoles are, you know, the ease of use and accessibility of playing video games is so great to have a console. PCs, you have to be a little bit of a power user. I guess that's why they call them PC Master Race.
Absolutely. I mean, I will always, like you, have the consoles at my heart, and as soon as the PlayStation 5 releases, you know, the newer titles, then I'll be playing those, and they will not be on my PC. I will be playing on my PlayStation, because I enjoy it, and it's the ease and the fact that the cost as well, the cost element, as with everything, the fact that you can, you know, pick up the new technology, the prices really haven't changed, have they? From when the PlayStation 2 launched all the way, the 2s, the 3s, the 4s and the 5s, really, their launch prices have not really been a huge amount of difference.
Right. And the reason why I like talking about this, and the reason why I wanted to kind of establish this kind of conversation about consoles and PCs is because you have dedicated your stream to mobile gaming. And with it being dedicated to mobile gaming is way more accessible than consoles and way, way more accessible than gaming PCs. What have you seen as far as the innovation when it comes to that? Obviously, it's something that's more international than consoles and PCs. You know, there's more people competing, more people that have access to mobile gaming. So what have you seen thus far?
I mean, you've got to think back to when we first played a game on our mobile phones, what did we play? We probably all played
Snake.
I don't know, Snake. Snake. It's got to be in there. You could play Snake anywhere. It didn't matter. We won't go into the places that most men play that played Snake anyway. But it's yeah, you would literally play it all the time. What was it, a Nokia?
Yeah,
I think Nokia 3310 or something. We had it on. So, but I mean, if you think we're, you know, where the gaming world has gone, and the fact that they're now putting out, you know, high level, you know, I graphically you wouldn't say they were AAA titles on mobile phones, but the fact you can play the likes of Call of Duty, you know, PUBG, Free Fire, Mobile Legends, which is absolutely monstrous game, isn't it? And, and these games, and they're not just games that, again, that you play and you complete levels. You compete. You're competing again. You could sit anywhere in your house and you could be competing, you know, within, 30 seconds of loading your game up, you can be competing against people from all over the world. And as far as mobile gaming's concerned, the growth is going to be huge. It's people cannot afford to keep buying all of the consoles. They can't afford a gaming PC, but the majority will and can eventually afford to have a smartphone that's good enough to play, you know, even if they're playing these games on the lowest settings, they can still play the game. They can still enjoy it. They can still meet people from all around the world, whether it's competitive esports or, you know, it's just a casual gamer. And that's the fun of it, isn't it, really?
Well, what's really crazy about it, and to kind of pull back to consoles in the conversation, is most smartphones are more sophisticated and smarter than the original Xbox, which was able to connect to the internet and play on multiplayer, all those things. But now you have a console in your pocket, you know, and whether that be the Switch or whatever, because I've been hearing whispers about LTE being able to be connected to the Switches so that you can go around playing on cellular networks and stuff like that. Like thinking back to the PSPs and the PS Vitas that were able to connect to LTE or not LTE, 3G or whatever the services was back then. It's gaming phones offer more accessibility than consoles in a way, because they're more like pocket PCs. They're more they're able to access more games than consoles generally do.
No, so absolutely.
That's what's going to be good.
I mean, you just need to open your app store and look at the amount of game titles, and they can be anything from a Sims-esque game to, you know, to the Call of Duty titles to, you know, you can still play your old classics, things like, you know, I mean, what we're talking, Angry Birds was huge, wasn't it? Flappy Birds, you
too.
Know, all of these games, you know, they have a place in gaming, and they're evolving. And the fact that you can just pick up your mobile phone and play, and you can then put your mobile phone down, and you can do it anywhere. So you can be traveling in the car, can't you? You can be not when you're driving, though. Let's get that one. You can be in the back of the car, but you can be on the trains, can't you? And you can even play games on, you know, any mode of transport. It's amazing. And the accessibility is incredible, and all over the world, the gaming phones are evolving. So you're seeing, you know, seeing new gaming phones coming out of places and countries that you probably have never, you know, you never thought that technology was available, and then all of a sudden they're on the market, and you know, and they're flying, aren't they? So you know, the fact we can do that, I mean, I'm super excited. The fact that, you know, yes we stream. I actually do stream from my PC. So because of the types of commentary work that I do, and it's actually a lot easier to control through an emulated game, but they're all official by the game's makers. The fact that mobile game developers will also have kind of, you know, PC support in the background. And I do believe that's actually for things that I do. So that the commentary, the setting up of more competitive gaming, because if you've got access to that on a PC, you can do a lot more in the background about, you know, setting up your tournaments, your competitions, what your leagues, whatever you're doing. There's just it's just something in the background that you can link to. But the fact that they can do that, you know, is phenomenal. I say it wasn't that long ago since Snake was out, really, was it?
Not at all. And you bring up the tournaments part of this. How many tournaments have you done on your channel thus far? Are the tournaments, are they branded as My Magnum Hurts?
Sometimes. So the majority of the tournaments we do at the moment, because of actually work commitments, is a lot of the time is for supporters and their friends. So people support the channel for the, you know, for a small donation a month, and then we use that for prize monies, giveaways, and just fun things within the community to build the community and build the brand around the stream, which a lot, obviously a lot of streamers do. We try to go kind of over and above for our supporters, just because we're very lucky. We don't have to earn money from the stream, because my wife and I both have jobs, so that makes it a lot easier. So we can donate a lot of money to that charity, and then we can put a lot of money back into the community, which is incredible. So I mean, we were at the height, kind of at the end of last year, so the kind of the end of 2020, we were doing 3 tournaments a week. Mm-hmm. So, and that's tournaments that a couple we were organizing, and then others would organize. You'd have sponsored tournaments with prize money. I mean, the biggest tournament we've run so far, it doesn't seem a lot of money, but it was $1,000 prize pool, 175 teams from around the world. So, and then the fact that a stream that started 18 months ago for a 40-year-old gamer in the United Kingdom, and now we've got some of the top teams in the world that are ranked on, you know, for Call of Duty Mobile playing in our tournaments. Yeah. That just shows you how kind of accessible and you know, kind of the connections that you can make via especially Facebook gaming is phenomenal, because a lot of these top streamers do stream or do have connections to streamers via Facebook gaming, which is incredible. So yeah, that just shows you. I'd love to see the stats, actually, to see how many mobile games are streamed via each of the channels. I really would.
Oh right, right, yeah.
Because I do think that that Facebook gaming has probably got the jump on the mobile, not PCs and consoles, but I do think they've probably got the jump on the mobile gaming, because it's so easy to stream to Facebook gaming from your mobile.
Yeah, they've that was largely because they acquired Mob Crush. The software behind Mob Crush was acquired by Facebook, and that team kind of merged in to the Facebook gaming world. Also with the acquisition of Mixer, or however that deal ended up working, they acquired a lot of information and data to make mobile gaming more more compelling and more viewer friendly. Whereas, you know, it's kind of complicated to stream mobile games if you're, you know, having to connect all of these devices in order to connect it to a streaming PC, and unless you run an emulator like you talked about, it's not all devices are prepared to be recorded that way.
I must admit, I mean, obviously with the technology moving forward as it is, like you're saying about the phones, that there are so many apps now where people can, you know, link things like Omelette Arcade. They're very simplistic apps, but they do an excellent job about linking it, and you can link it to your streams, and the stream quality is good. I think that's the thing about, you know, what I've found on Facebook. You don't have to stream for a long time. You just have to be consistent to then open up the kind of the perks with regards to getting a better quality stream out there. So and you don't have to have a huge amount of expensive equipment to do it, which is, you know, again, one of the wonders of, once you've got your mobile, once you've got a simple adapter that you can that you can plug in, it's away you go, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it's making it a lot more accessible to stream. The one thing that Facebook gaming does that's different, I guess, than YouTube and Twitch, is that their monetization program is much more accessible and easy than I think that the affiliate program, or, you know, getting your channel monetized on YouTube is. They've always been, you know, very straightforward, and the star system is easy to, you know, it's easier, I feel, in some ways than the bit system. And so there's a lot of opportunity there. And outside of the monetization stuff, you mentioned that you ran tournaments for charity. What's the reception like on Facebook for the charity streams?
I found them phenomenal. Actually, the new one of the new Facebook options is that you can have on your stream the direct links for people to donate directly to those charities. So there is no, you know, there is no middleman. There is not a cut that's coming out of it. Right. The way we've done ours on our stream is the monetization options were always opened up fairly early on. Actually, it was back when I started 18 months ago, it was 100 followers. You had to stream for a certain amount of hours. But once you've reached that, then you would the stars option would open. Kind of the supporter / subscribers option comes a little bit further down the line. You have to have, you know, a certain amount of returning viewership. But it's very clear, you know, and very simple from that respect. But Facebook have always been supportive. It's easy and clear, so people know. And I think that's hugely important when you're saying you're streaming for charity, the clarity around what you're doing. And Facebook have allowed us to do that from the beginning. So,
yeah, you know, I mean, they have the relationships to do it. And I guess Amazon does too, but it seems there's some separation between Twitch and Amazon. And so they don't necessarily have that level of integration between their streamers and their charities. You know, because if you go on Amazon, you buy a product, you can support your charity of choice, but you can't necessarily do that on Twitch. It's usually campaigns like, you know, St. Jude's or Children's Hospitals or something like that.
Yeah.
That are like a campaign, like a...
Yeah, absolutely. And they're the bigger charities. And you actually see a lot of the large, I don't know how many of the large Facebook streamers that you know or watch, but there's people like Stone Mountain 64 is one of the biggest, you know, Queen Eliminator, etc. When they do their charity events, which they always do, and they're very popular and people are very generous, it is all very, very clear and set out on Facebook. You can see, and they've got the totalizer at the bottom where people have donated and it moves through. But I mean, there's definitely some improvements that Facebook gaming can make with regards to the amounts of charities, because a lot of the charities on the lists are all US based.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm obviously not in the US. So the charity that we support is a very small UK charity that supports gamers with quite severe disabilities. So, but they're not, because they're not a huge mainstream UK charity, they're not always on the, or available on, or, you know, on different lists via different platforms. So,
right. Something you, I mean, when you brought up the two Queen and Eliminator and Stone Mountain, is something that I was thinking is there's like a cultural divide in some ways between the top streamers on a YouTube, a Twitch, and a Facebook. Why do you think that there's not as much collaboration or like cross platform content collaboration? In the YouTube and Twitch space, there are some, but when it comes to the Facebook side, it doesn't seem that the Facebook gaming people, other than maybe Corinna, you know, kind of crosses over.
I really struggle with that, actually. Because I do watch a lot of streamers, and I watch more on Facebook than I do on Twitch and YouTube. But I know a lot of streamers that produce content on them all, so I'm on them all. So I will browse, but is it that Facebook gaming is so new, people didn't take it seriously? They didn't think it was a gamers in inverted commas platform, and that, you know, that people shouldn't be, you know, producing content and putting it on Facebook because, you know, us gamers should be separated. It's not. I mean, many people watch gaming channels for different reasons. a lot of people want to learn. You know, they want to learn the new tips and tricks, or they want to know the best guns, or they want to know the best strategies in certain games.
Right. Yeah.
And others, they just want to sit there and they want to. It's like that television program. They just want to be entertained for how a lot. I find myself watching more entertainment gamers now than I ever have done. And that's across all the platforms. And I do really struggle with that divide. And I think I really hope it's not that they look down on Facebook gaming content creators. But it's always been the big two, you know, kind of Twitch and YouTube have always been those powerhouses, haven't they? And if you've made it big on those, then you don't see many. It's not many content creators that have jumped ship from YouTube to or YouTube or Twitch to Facebook Gaming, though, have they? Really? Queen Eliminator did, I believe.
I think she was from Mixer.
Oh, was she? So she was Mixer. Interesting.
And I think that the person that jumped ship from YouTube to Twitch was Nick A30. And then the other way around, Twitch to YouTube, was Courage JD. That's his name, full name. And then from Twitch to Facebook Gaming was Disguised Toast. But I think that contract is, I think it's done. I think that they terminated the contract. I think he's back on Twitch now. Corinna is the biggest acquisition by Facebook, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting to see, you know, what the kind of the highest level kind of entertainers and partners moving across, because they will obviously move across on paid contracts, etc., and it'll be you know, it'll be set fees, and then they'll obviously promote their page hugely, where they've got a lot. Facebook have got a lot of good. I don't know if you can really call them, because are we going to call them the top tier, and then, you know, the kind of the, you know, the top tier, higher tier, to be, you know, to be a nicer phrase. Well,
in the esports world, you have tier one organizations, and many of them are signed to those tier one organizations. Mm-hmm. So what I was going to say is that it's sort of like trading across different teams. But if there's only three teams in the league, so I mean, if you get traded, I mean, you don't hear that much. I mean, it was pretty shocking when Tom Brady was traded to the Buccaneers. And so I think that these teams, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook, they really want to retain their top content creators. And if there's some reason why they can't, you know, I'm sure they're not very happy, especially with the situation that happened with Ninja and Shroud and King Goliath and then whatnot. So, you know, they probably would love to keep their content creators on their platform. Twitch maybe not so much anymore, because they don't want to be, they seem to become stagnant in their monetization rules. I think somebody put out a video recently that you can negotiate with them to get the larger split. It's like 70%, 30% to Twitch or something like that, because it was I think 50-50 or something worse than that.
I've seen and heard from fellow streamers that, you know, some of them that, you know, there's a 50-50 split, where, again, if you look at Facebook terms and conditions, it's, you know, it's a lot less. And actually, they're doing a lot of things currently where, actually, if people are subscribing direct and not subscribing through kind of Apple and Android, then they're not taking a cut. So if you're doing it directly via your, you know, your browser, your PC, and you're subscribing to a channel, or, you know, you're buying stars, you're getting a lot more for your money. So Facebook are taking less. I mean, don't get me wrong, these platforms will earn a lot of money. But then, you know, you look at the streamers, and some of them are on phenomenal money. I mean, money talks in the industry, and it always will do.
Right.
So,
so what do you think the next big thing is? What's the next big innovation do you see coming with, especially with Facebook, with, you know, they own Oculus. What do you think about something else like VR or mixed reality or augmented reality?
I would love to see. I've been a huge fan. So I haven't actually got an Oculus VR. I had one when I was doing my buying and selling, but that went out the door pretty quickly. But I've had the PlayStation version, and I think there was a lot of movement in there. And this, I would love to see more entertainment, you know, kind of in that market space. Because I don't think there is a lot, is there? I mean, I've actually searched for VR streamers, and you won't find a lot, especially on Facebook. I don't know if Twitch and YouTube do the same.
It's growing. There's a few that have. There's really only one that's crossed over into the mainstream, but he's also Soda Poppin's friend, so you know he kind of gets the famous friend discount or whatever it is, or whatever. And yeah, there's a few different ones. I really like if you ever watch Sushi Dragon, I'll send you the link for it to take a look at it. And anybody who's listening, go look at Sushi Dragon's content in basically mixed reality, augmented reality, VR, all in one stream. It's insane.
Yeah. I mean, and this, you know, the technology is moving, isn't it? Well, you know, I was always a huge fan of, you know, especially like racing sims and things like that, when people would have a, you know, a full racing sim in their house, and it'd be like, you know, and where we came from and where we are now, the fact that you can just buy simple things like that, the excitement of bringing that extra technology in. But now with VR, it's a new step, and VR and augmented reality has moved on a huge amount since it was first launched. I mean, say graphically, I mean, imagine where this could go. I mean, we already know that they're probably, you know, PlayStation are probably on VR number 4 or whatever it's going to be. You never know names. The technology's there. They just haven't released it yet, have they? They're still building it. But yes, it's an interesting one. But I'd like to see how they're going to integrate things, because we've already talked about mobile gaming being. You know, growing in popularity and people not being able to afford. I mean, you can't afford. I mean, I don't know how much an Oculus Rift is now.
Right, I think it's $499.
Yeah, so $400-$500. It's not. That's not accessible. It's not accessible to everybody just to buy to do that. But you know, what are they going to integrate? What are you going to be able to do on your mobile phones, technology wise, in the future? And is it all going to be about, you know, is it all going to be about gaming / entertainment? I mean, the possibilities are endless. I'm super excited, and as you talked about it earlier, you know, the fact that you can buy a PC that's in your pocket and carry it anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, where is this going to go? I mean, we didn't think we would be here 10 years ago, and now look where we are, and what, you know, and what we're doing, and what content is available on all the platforms.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I appreciate you coming on the show. Before I let you go and we sign this off, I want to let the audience know where can they find you, and how can they get connected to your upcoming tournaments?
So everything we do is on Facebook Gaming. So you can search my Magnum Hertz. You don't have to put the underscores in. If you search my Magnum Hertz, we'll come straight up at the top, because it's one of those names that kind of stands out on Facebook. There's no one with this name. All you need to do to get connected for any of the tournaments that we're looking at doing is either drop me a message, or when we put our tournament posts up, which are very regularly on the page, because that's the part that my wife and I love doing, you can just drop us a comment on Facebook. Super easy. I do have other socials, by the way. I do have a YouTube channel, and we do have kind of Twitter and other bits and pieces, but I tend to do most of the things because we're a Facebook partner. We try and generate all the traffic through. TikTok is coming, my wife tells me. I'll be very interested to see what I can do on TikTok to promote the channel differently, but yes.
Well, awesome. Thank you very much for coming on the show. Again, this has been Russell Folwell, my Magnum Hertz on Facebook Gaming. This has been the Esports Business Network podcast. Thank you for listening.
Hey, y'all. It's Trent Knox, founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. I want to say thank you for listening to this podcast. If you're finding value in the podcast, I would greatly appreciate it if you share the podcast to your network and write a positive review on your preferred podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, feel free to make a contribution to our working capital accounts on Cash App or PayPal. Our username is ESPORTSBIZNET. That's Esports BizNet on both platforms. As always, we'd love for you to join our community and platform at https://www.ebn.gg. You can take advantage of a free subscription to our bronze membership by following the directions on the homepage. Part of the bronze membership is access to our Discord server and private membership channels. The conversation only evolves with participation from esports entrepreneurs like yourself. We need to hear about your esports business to understand how we can move the industry forward as a community. You can also join the community by joining the Facebook and LinkedIn groups. An additional goal of EBN is to move the conversation forward on your preferred social media platform. So as a last note, don't forget to follow us on social media for current events, news, and other esports related topics. Follow and subscribe to Esports Business Network on social media. Looking forward to networking with you very soon.